day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the NTRA Road to the Triple Crown 2018 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, participants are asked to press star 1 to register for a question. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Mr. Jim Mulvihill. Please go ahead, sir.
All right. Thank you, Michelle, and thanks, everyone, for joining us. If you haven't heard, I just want everyone to know we did have one change to our lineup today. Aidan O'Brien was going to come on, but people emailed a little while ago saying that something came up and it has to cancel. Not anything to do with Mendelsohn, of course, just a scheduling conflict. So we're sorry not to have Aidan, but that just gives us a little bit more time with our three original guests, who I think most would agree are the three most successful trainers in American racing. Coming up later, we'll get to visit with Bob Baffert and Chad Brown. But first, we're delighted to have two-time Kentucky Derby winner Todd Pletcher, who absolutely dominated the final reps this year. He's set to start 4 in the Derby, which would mark the 6th time he's saddled 4 or more, and he'll surpass Wayne Lucas with the most career Derby starts. Currently, they're tied with 48 apiece. Todd, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Congratulations on all of your success throughout this Derby prep season. You know, for starters, just to maybe run through them, perhaps you could give us the top-of-mind thoughts on each of your four, if you don't mind. Could we just start with the Arkansas Derby winner, Magnum Moon?
Well, he's a colt that we've been very high on since literally my dad broke him as a yearling in September after he was purchased by Jacob West for the Lowe's out of the Keeneland September sale. And I remember seeing him back in December when he first started galloping. He's just, you know, he's a natural athlete that has always had a tremendous presence about him, a great way of moving. And he'd originally brought him in at Saratoga in May. He had a couple minor baby issues that we just felt like being a May foal and a horse with a lot of promise that we would give him some time off and send him back down to my dad's training center in Ocala, and he freshened him up nicely for us, and he hadn't missed a beat since he came back, and it's just been a, you know, tremendous development for him to go from a 6-furlong maiden on January 13th to now being 4-for-4 and, you know, winning the Arkansas Derby in his fourth start. I think, you know, it just tells you a lot about the quality and natural ability that he has.
Well, absolutely. There were a lot of questions from people about his bearing out in the stretch to the Arkansas Derby. I'm just curious how you interpreted that and just what that means to you.
Well, he's a very curious colt. You know, he's very smart, and he looks around quite a bit, and he's drifted out a little bit in all of his starts. But the one thing that's been consistent is he only does it when he's kind of clear of the field. And, you know, he's been fortunate enough to be clear of the field in all four of his races inside the 16th pole. And, you know, so I really think if he has a target or if he has horses around him, that it will not be an issue, and it hasn't been an issue, and I don't expect it to be a problem tomorrow morning when he breezes. It's just that it tends to happen when he gets by himself and he's just looking around and take everything in.
Excellent. And now just some thoughts on Audible.
Another very talented colt that you know, it's just really, really blossomed this winter and spring. And, you know, we felt like early on that he was a very, very nice colt. But, you know, I think his Holy Bull was kind of the breakthrough performance that, you know, we were hoping for, actually exceeded expectations. And, you know, for him to follow that up with an authoritative win in the Florida Derby and handle the stretch out to a mile and an eighth, I think is just you know, I love the way that he was attended the pace in the Holy Bull, and he dropped well off of you know, a very fast pace in the Florida Derby. So it shows his versatility, and you know, I love the way he's finished those two races and really shown a turn of foot, which is not always easy to do in dirt races.
Excellent. Vino Rosso seems to be coming to hand at the right time.
Vino Rosso is one that we were, you know, very, very high on the way he was training all winter. And, you know, we're a little bit perplexed by two of his races at Tampa. He had a pretty easy time of it in his second start when he won the allowance race at Tampa. But the next two races, the Sam Davis, we felt like he just sort of lost his attention a little bit in the far turn and then re-rallied. And so blinkers were something that we had discussed, and John Velasquez had mentioned that he thought at some point blinkers might be in the cards. And so after the Sam Davis, we decided to put him on, and he trained very well, and we were confident that was going to take care of his loss of ground in the far turn in the Sam Davis when we ran him back in the Tampa Derby. Unfortunately, it did not. And after just kind of piecing everything together, we just felt like maybe it was the Tampa surface that he wasn't handling. So came back and trained very well. And in the Wood Memorial, I think we got to see the real Vino Rosso. And, you know, I think part of that is getting back on a surface that he liked, and probably even a bigger part of it was stretching out to a mile and an eighth. And we've always felt strongly that more distance is going to be in his favor. And I think he should relish the mile and a quarter. And, you know, I think he'll stay a mile and a half as well. So we're excited about giving him that opportunity to stretch out a little more.
Excellent. And real quick, I want to remind everybody that if you have a question for Todd, you can go ahead and start queuing up now. Go ahead and hit star one, and we'll start lining up the questions, but first, talked about all won their final prep races in dominant fashion. Noble Indy, though, really had to gut it out.
He did, and I was proud of him for doing that. And I don't think you see too many horses, regardless of how much experience they have, that can get past a neck or a half a length and then re-engage and fight back and able to put his head back in front. I thought was, showed a lot of courage on his part. And, he's a horse that's sort of flying under the radar a little bit at the moment, I guess maybe because the Louisiana Derby was, 6 weeks before the Kentucky Derby. But, you know, he's put together a very strong resume. He's lightly raced, but very talented as well.
Undoubtedly. Well, Michelle, do you want to see what questions our media has for Todd?
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. Our first question comes from David Grenning of Daily Racing Form. Please go ahead.
Hey, Todd. I was wondering if you could just talk a little bit about Johnny's input for this group of horses and how instrumental he's been in maybe sort of directing you and what to do and what not, equipment-wise or whatever else with this particular group of horses.
Well, he's actually, he's been on all four of them, including Magnum Moon, before his debut, and he was actually, I think, at the fairgrounds on January 13th to ride Wonder Godot and the Silver Bullet Day, I think it was. So that's kind of how Luis Saez ended up on Magnum Moon. But so he knows all four horses very well, and I think in particular, the most conversations we've had were about Noble Indy and Vino Rosso and the similarities in their little bit in their personalities, and they both had a tendency to kind of look around and both had a tendency to idle when they make the lead. And so, most of the conversations with Johnny on those two have been about whether or not we wanted to put blinkers on them. So that he's instrumental in that decision process. And, ultimately we decided in both cases to go ahead and do that. And, I think it certainly helped both of them just focus in a little bit more and maintain that focus through the finish line.
Do you think his sticking with Vino Rosso is confirmation in what you've been seeing with this horse all winter and spring?
Well, I think he's always been very, very keen on Vino Rosso, and he's always liked him, and he's been on him a lot. He's worked him a lot. He's ridden him in all of his races. But, you know, I think it was a very tough decision, and, you know, he just won the Florida Derby on Audible and just won the Wood on Vino Rosso. So, it was a tough decision, and it was his call. But I know it's not those situations are never easy.
One last question. Have you firmed up Noble Indies, right?
Florent Drew is going to breeze him tomorrow, and assuming that all that goes well and we're all pleased and everything kind of holds true with all the horses, we're going to use Florent.
Thank you very much. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Frank Angus of Blood Horse Magazine. Please go ahead.
Hey, Todd, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Hey, the Florida Derby's had a nice run here in the last few years in terms of Kentucky Derby performance. Beyond some good horses, do you think there's some factors that also kind of are in its favor? I was thinking along the lines of the timing of the race and some of the nice training facilities down there.
I think both of those are excellent points. I love where it's positioned 5 weeks out. I think it's, sort of an ideal time. And, you know, it gives you the opportunity, if you're based in Florida, to not ship for that final round. And I think, you know, that can be an advantage as well. And, you know, between Gulfstream and Palm Meadows and Palm Beach Downs, where we stable, and Payson Park, you know, there's some very good facilities. And everyone goes down there for a good climate and good weather and reliable training schedules. And, you know, I think all of that is very important to the development of, you know, successful three-year-olds. But I think the other thing is just there's just a lot of good young horses, three-year-olds in Florida for the winter, and, some powerful stables. And so that's probably the single most important factor.
Yeah. How big has Palm Beach Downs been for your operation?
It just seems to work really well for us. It's, you know, it's a very quiet facility, but, the surface has been very safe for us, and it just seems like horses do well there. And they not only do well while training there, it seems that they can leave there and go to Gulfstream or go to Aqueduct or go to Fairgrounds or go to Oaklawn or go to Tampa and generally run well, you know, regardless of where we ship them. So it seems to prepare them for just about any surface.
Gotcha. Thanks, Todd.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Art Wilson, Southern California News Group. Please go ahead.
Yeah, Todd, can you just talk a little bit about the so-called Apollo jinx or curse? What have you? Of course, you have one of the horses this year that could end that drought. Do you think that's just some kind of a wacky, wild stat, or do you think there's anything to it with maybe having a lack of foundation, what for it?
Well, I mean, you know, it's lasted long enough that I guess there has to be something to it, but I feel strongly that at some point someone's gonna reverse the curse, but if it's this year, I wouldn't be surprised. Obviously, Justify appears to be tremendously talented, and Magnum Moon does as well. So, there's probably a number of reasons for it, and inexperience could be part of it. It always helps in these situations to have a little bit of seasoning experience and overcome some adversity. But I think when the right horse comes along, it will happen.
And my last question, you've had a number of years when you've saddled three or more horses in the Derby. Does that add any more pressure to you, having to worry about, two, three, four, five horses rather than just one?
I think it goes both ways. In some ways, it adds a little pressure, more pressure. You got more horses that you're trying to prepare and hoping that everything goes smoothly and so with that comes some added pressure. I've also think that when you only have one, you know, that's pressure too, because if something happens, you're out of the race, period. So I think it kind of goes both ways.
Thanks. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Don Jensen of Tampa Bay Times. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Todd, I want to gear this more towards the Tampa Foundation and the track itself. Your first two Kentucky Derby winners, Super Saver and Always Dreaming, came through Tampa before they won the Derby. And this year you had Vina Rosa coming up to win an allowance race before his two performances in the stakes, and also Magnum Moon came up to win an allowance race. Can you talk about why you put Tampa in those plans and what Tampa offers you as far as preparation down the road?
Well, first of all, I think Allison DeLuca does a tremendous job as racing secretary there, and she's been very helpful in accommodating some of our horses and some allowance races, and at the same time, I think it's been great for Tampa to have some Derby winners come through there. But first, it's logistically a fairly short trip from our Palm Beach Downs headquarters, and secondly, in a lot of cases it's a two turn opportunity and to gain some experience and education for these horses. It's a very safe surface and a reliable surface, and I think one that helps get horses ready to go on to bigger races down the road. But it's been a great outlet for us over the years to take horses through there, whether it's in some cases like Always Dreaming, a maiden race, or the two horses you mentioned, allowance races, or Super Saber in the Tampa Derby, and we've had some other horses that have gone that route that didn't win the Derby, but I think getting races in them at Tampa Bay Downs has helped move them forward.
All right. Well, I think that's all the questions for Todd. And Todd, we're going to let you go. We really appreciate your time as always, and we'll see you out at the barn soon enough.
Okay. Thanks very much.
All right, Todd Pletcher, always appreciate his time. He'll saddle four in the Kentucky Derby. And now we've got to move on to our next guest. And as always, we're happy to welcome back a four-time Kentucky Derby winning trainer, Bob Baffert. He's going to saddle the undefeated Santa Anita Derby winner, Justify, and the Breeders' Cup juvenile runner-up, Solomini, of course, as well. Bob, thanks for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Of course, we're always happy to have you on. Let's just get right to Justify. He might be a super horse. We've all seen the talent, and he'll almost certainly go favored next weekend. How you feel about him right now?
Well, I mean, we're excited about it. Everybody's on pins and needles this time of year, and so. We have a really good horse, but there's a lot of good horses out there this year. I think it's pretty probably the most competitive Derby I've seen in years.
Well, and the talent lining up against you is one of the concerns. What else is going to keep you up at night the next 10 days or so?
No, those trainers, we're day by day with these horses, but. But I think a lot of it is just, we're prepping and, we're almost there. And, so we've got to go through the paces, but, so far we know we have a good horse and, but you still need a lot of racing luck. You need to draw well I've been there with the best horse and got beat and I know what it's like, so you can never take anything for granted. You just got to go, day by day and get there and hope that everything goes your way. Because I've been there with a lot of good horses that didn't get the right breaks. And, you know, it, it didn't happen. So I don't take anything for granted.
Well, you know, one time you were there with perhaps the best horse and who got beat. You also won the race. So let's not ignore Soleimani either. Just tell us if you think can Soleimani win this race?
Well, I think Soleimani is a horse that's, you know, he's you know, he actually won a grade one and got taken down. So we know the talent is there. You just have to, you know, he's going to have to get some breaks go his way. Last race, he was there. He really didn't, you know, he didn't bring his A game with him for some reason, but he came out of the race really well and he's been training well. He looked happy. He came out of that race well. So, you know, you never know. I mean, you just things, crazy things happen to Derby. When you have 20 horses, crazy things happen. You know, if it was a, you know, 12 horse gate, then, you know, all your, you know, the race usually runs the way it's on paper. You know, on paper, you know, he's a little bit slower than some of those horses in there, but, you know, he's, as long as he's doing well, you know, they all deserve a chance.
Very good. Well, I want to give everyone a chance to ask a question to you, Bob, so I'll let Michelle check with the media.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star 1 at this time. The first question comes from Bill Finley of Thoroughbred Daily News. Please go ahead.
Hey, Bob. If you run down the Derby field this year between yourself, Mark Cassie, Kieran McLaughlin, Todd, and Chad, 10 of the 20 starters are in those hands. You throw in Aidan O'Brien. That's number 11. And it seems that's emblematic of the trend that's happening in racing where the so-called super trainers are dealing and handling more and more of the good horses. Why do you think this is happening? Why are owners gravitating so much more now to the Pletchers, Baffert's, Chad Browns of the world than maybe they did 5-6 years ago?
Well, I mean, it's all due to success. I mean, you know, it's like anything. It's like if you have a successful program, people are going to, that's why they hire us. I mean, if I had a very low win percentage, I don't think I would be getting any horses, but I think a lot of those barns that you mentioned, it's like the bigger outfits and the young horse, they have a lot of 2-year-olds. And so when you start out with, you know, a good bunch of 2-year-olds and everybody wants to be at the Derby and I just think it's like, you know, we're all trying to win, you know, we're all trying to win at that top level, but I think that's what it is, just hard work and people trying to be, you know, trying to play at that level. But it all comes down to, you know, having, you know, if you get lucky and have a nice 2-year-old, it turns into a 3-year-old. But everything is success. You win, you're going to get horses. If you don't win, you're just not going to get the horses.
Mm-hmm. And Bob, a follow-up. Some people, and among them smaller trainers who are struggling and not getting a lot of good horses, and even some racing secretaries are arguing this is not necessarily good for the game to have so much power in so few hands. Is there anything to that argument, or do you think, you know, it's the way of the world?
I'm
sorry, could you repeat
that,
Bob?
You cut out there.
Okay.
You cut out there. What did you say?
Yeah. Particularly from the smaller trainers, guys who are struggling a little bit, and even from some racing secretaries, people are saying this is not necessarily the best thing for the sport to have so many good horses in so few hands. Do you think they have a valid argument, or do you think that it's just like you said, hey, I do well, what am I supposed to do? I do good, people give me horses.
Well, I mean, I think if you look at all those big trainers, they all started out small. We were all small. I started out with one horse. I had to struggle. We all struggled. It didn't happen overnight. So it's like a doctor, you know, you're going to go to a good doctor I think it just happens that way where, you know, if you work really hard and you know, as a trainer, I'm sure all these trainers you mentioned, Todd, me, we do this 7 days a week. I mean, we work at it. We work hard. We make a lot of sacrifices. And now that's why, you know, if you make those sacrifices, you're going to be rewarded. And so I think a lot of it just, it's the American way. If you work hard and, you know, you're going to be successful, it's like any business. And, you know, but I really can't speak for the other, but I think for me, it's just, I really work hard at it. I mean, I don't take vacations. I don't go anywhere. I just, and that's why I'm successful. And it's just a lot of hard effort, and I'm rewarded with good horses. But I think it comes down at the end of the day. I mean, there's a lot of trainers out there that work hard at it, but you just have to, you know, I've always, since I was training quarter horses, I was successful in quarter horses. Wayne Lucas, same thing. You know, just, you know, they just, we want to be, we're very competitive. And I think that's our very competitive nature and wanting to be at the top. And that's why we're there. But you cannot, I couldn't go halfway on it and be where I was. You have to go full, you know, full steam.
Very good.
Bob, thanks for your time. Good luck in the Derby.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question comes from Pat Ford, Yoohoo Sports. Please go ahead.
Hey, Bob. I'm just wondering, I know you always have a lot of talented young horses in your barn, but I'm wondering when Justify first kind of started to make himself known as a real talent and what he did to do that, to show that to you.
Well, when he came in from Kentucky, he'd been in Keeneland. He was up to a half a mile, and they said he was a really nice horse. And when we got him to Los Alamitos, we worked him a few times there, and he was always looked impressive there. And then when I got him over to Santa Anita, the first time I worked him here, I knew he was something really special. He worked 5/8 and just did it. Just usually they get a little tired because our track at Santa Anita is really deep. It's a different track now, and it was really deep. And he just went around there and just did it effortlessly. And that's when I knew he was really, you know, cut above the rest. You know, to me, it was like McKenzie was that way. You know, they just the really good ones that would really separate themselves. They get ready quickly. They do things effortlessly. So you didn't have to really work at it like some of these other horses. They have to really, you know, they struggle through it. And so, but he handled his first work really well, and then he had a couple gate works. You know, never really turned him loose. He worked, you know, 12-4, 13, just doing it in hand, you know, and I knew, and then his first out, the way he ran his first out was just incredible, the way he went really fast fractions and just rebroke, you know, so, you know, he showed us right there how special he was.
And has he had any hiccups along the way, or has it just kind of unfolded the way you'd hoped?
No, he just, you know, they bought him well. I haven't heard anything. You know, when he got to me, I never heard, he came with a clean bill of health, so it was never, I've never heard anything say he had this or that or whatever. So,
okay, thank you. We'll see you next week.
You got it.
Thank you. The next question comes from Jonathan Lintner of Horse Racing Nation. Please go ahead.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for taking a few minutes to do this. I was talking to Wayne Lucas the other day. It started with the Curse of Apollo and Justify and all that. And he said, you know, if there's anybody who can do that, it's Bob Baffert. And, you know, I asked him, it seemed like for a long time people wanted to make you all out to be rivals, but it seems like there's a really good friendship there. And he mentioned that you had even written a foreword for a book that he's putting together of quotes. I was just wondering, was there a rivalry at any point between the two, and maybe what has allowed this friendship to blossom the last few years that we've seen?
Well, I mean, Wayne and I, we're really good friends. You know, we come from the same background, quarter horses. So, and he, when he was at the quarter horse, he was the king there, you know, and he just, everywhere he went, he just became, he's changed quarter horse racing in California. He came to the Thoroughbreds, he did the same thing. He changed, everywhere he goes, he's just changed it. He's just, not only is he a great horseman and great trainer, but he's a great organizer, and he thinks outside the box. He just really, you know, he's probably one of the hardest workers I've ever seen. His work ethic is just incredible, you know, even at this age, he doesn't slack off at all. But, But he's very smart. And, at one time we were both training for Bob Lewis, and Bob Lewis just sort of pit us against each other. But it was, we were always trying to get there, and, they would throw us, the quarter horse guys going up against each other. And to me, Wayne Lucas was always the bar. He was always the bar to me, and I wanted to get there, and he still is the bar because he'll go down as one of the greatest trainers ever. So, he's just, I have the utmost respect for him, and he's just, he's a positive guy. He just always thinks positive, and he's just, but he's sharp. He knows what's going on, and he'll see horses trained. He knows, so he's still a great horseman.
Thank you. And one other thing I wanted to ask you about, Soleimani working 3 furlongs, it's been a while since he had shortened up to that distance. I was wondering what you were trying to get out of that breeze at this point.
No, he just ran, and so I didn't want to go very far with him, so I just went 3/8 with him, and just to sharpen him up a little bit. And he worked really, really well, and so he came out of that, he's a happy horse right now, so. He just ran a little flat at Arkansas. He just didn't really put in his A game, but he came out of the race really well, So he was a little tired the first time he ran this year, but this time he looks really sharp. So I just wanted to sharpen him up a little bit just to, get him. He did it willingly. He was supposed to go like 36, 37, but he just really did it in hand nicely the right way. So that's, I wanted to see that he's, and he switched leads, did everything perfect.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you for the time.
Sure.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Ed McNamara of Newsday. Please go ahead.
Bob, I read a number of times that when Cavanier got nosed in the 96 Derby, you were devastated, and you thought that maybe that was your last chance. Now, looking back at that, I mean, could you possibly have envisioned the success you've had and all the great horses you've been able to train?
Yeah, I'll never forget that. When I got beat, I really thought I won the Derby that year, but where I was sitting, I was way before the wire, and I really thought he'd held on, and then it was a long photo, and people used to ask me, how's it feel? I said, well, I know for about 8 minutes, I felt like, I knew what it felt like to win the Kentucky Derby. I really felt like I won it. And then when they hung up the number, it hit me that night, like, wow, I'll never get another chance. This is it. I'll never get, it's so hard. There's so many great trainers that have never won it. They're really, if you don't have the right horse, but I really thought that was it. And I remember somebody wanted me to go look at the Derby Museum to see the show in there. And I said, I really don't want to go in there. And I remember going in there the week of Silver Charm, and I watched it where he got beat, and I left there, and I just felt really, it just really bothered me for a year. And then for Silver Charm to come back and win it, it was like, I lost that. It just felt like a heavy, it's just like a kicker missing a field goal for the win or something, or, it's just something that was just, I just felt like I missed my opportunity, and I would never get another chance. So it just made me hungrier. But I had the right horse. The thing is about Kentucky Derby, you have to have the right horse. It just happens. You can't force it. You can't make it happen. It's just going to happen. You all of a sudden you have good horses, and you're there. So I've been really fortunate to have some really good horses. I've had some, Point Given. I thought he couldn't lose. He ran fast, didn't run. That was so disappointing, because I really thought, he could win the Triple Crown, and then Real Quiet getting beat in Silver Charm in the Triple Crown. I just left there like thinking, wow, man, I just can't, three times I couldn't do it. And then here comes American Pharoah, he comes along and just does it all. So I'm really blessed to have had those opportunities. And when you get an opportunity like that, just do the right thing. And, you know, if you get a good horse like that, and I've had other horses that were, you know, West Coast, Airgate, you know, they were a little bit late, you know, but I just took my time with them, let them develop on their own. So, you know, I think it's just going to happen. You know, it just, that's the way it is, you know, just like, you know, usually know by, you know, by March, you know, if you know if you've got a Derby horse or not.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Larry Stuns of the San Francisco Chronicles. Please go ahead.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
Oh, fine, thanks.
Bob? Yeah, okay. obviously, Justify is talented enough. He's fast enough to win the Derby. Can just the lack of seasoning get him beat? Kind of referring to that long Apollo curse.
You know, I don't really... The Apollo thing, I mean, it comes up a lot, but I think it's back in the day, you know, people used to run their horses much earlier, and I think it's changed, you know, trainers, they take their time, you know, they don't run them as early two-year-olds anymore, and there's really not that many races to run them in so early. I remember we used to run two-year-old races here really early, and they don't run them until later now. There's just not that many two-year-old races early, so it's, I think the game has changed, and that's why you probably don't see it as often. But, I mean, it's going to happen, whether it happens this year or whatever, but it'll happen. Cause, you know, Bodie Meisser, you know, almost got away with it, but, you know, the pace got to him a little bit, but he was a really outstanding individual. So it's going to happen, but I don't really worry about that. To me, it doesn't even enter a lot of people have told me, hey, please get a start in my horse, you know, before, you know, so we can get that thing out of the way. Just like, you know, if you won the Breeders' Cup, you couldn't win the Derby in street sense. He got rid of that really quick. So I think it's just something, you know, to add to the conversation, you know, but I'd rather have a really talented horse over, you know, over a horse at season that's just, you know, par with the rest of them.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mike Spector of RacingDudes.com. Please go ahead.
Hi, Bob. You've shipped in a little bit earlier in the past for the Derby. What went into the decision to breeze Justify at Santa Anita as his last breeze and ship in for the week of the Derby?
Well, I think this track at Santa Anita, he's worked well here. It's a very deep, demanding track, so you know they get really fit here. And we've shipped everywhere all over, and I've shipped into Kentucky before, and I don't think there's a big difference. You know, I used to go in there a few weeks early and work out and hang around there, but now I don't think it makes a difference. Last year we went in there that week and we won the Kentucky Oaks, California Chrome in there week before, won, you know, a lot of horses California. Gun in there, so I don't think it makes a big difference.
Okay, my last question. Can you talk a little bit about your preparation for Raya for the Oaks and also how Abel Tasman's coming along for the La Trienne?
You know, she worked well the other day, and she's doing really well, so, I mean, it's going to be a good test for her. I mean, she's came from Dubai, so I'm asking her to do something that's impossible. You know, run in Dubai, come here, and then run in the in Kentucky Oaks. But so far, she came over in really great shape, and she looks healthy, and she's happy. And so, you know, it's a different group. Last time she got beat by Mendelssohn, who was just freaked that night. Nobody was going to beat him that night. And so, she beat the rest of the boys there. So she's definitely a tough filly, and I expect her to run a big race.
And how's Abel Tasman coming along for the La Trienne?
She's doing well. She's coming off a layoff. She looks good, so it's going to be a good starting spot for her. So we're really looking forward to it. We know she likes to chill down.
Okay, thanks a lot, Bob.
Sure.
Thank you. We do apologize for not being able to get to all the questions due to time constraints. I will now turn it back to Jim Mulvihill.
Bob, thanks so much for your time, as always. We'll see you at Churchill Downs in a few days.
Thank you. All right.
All right, that's Bob Baffert. And now we're happy to be joined by Chad Brown. Chad's the winner of the last two Eclipse Awards as the nation's outstanding trainer. And the last few days he's had a lot of very positive things to say about Good Magic, the Bluegrass winner and the champion two-year-old male of last year. Chad, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You got it. We're always happy to get a few minutes with you. I've been really interested in some of your remarks about Good Magic the last few days. I saw that you said around the barn that you've never seen a horse look so good. And regardless of whether that's hyperbole, it still says something about how you feel. Just tell us why you're feeling that way.
He's just he's a picture of health right now, and I've never seen the horse doing better. Quite a relief coming into a race like this, and he's always been a nice horse. And he had a terrific season last year, was champion and all. And then, you know, this winter didn't start off quite the way we wanted. He fell a little behind in his training and came up a little short in the Fountain of Youth, and he just wasn't quite at his best that day from a fitness standpoint. And, you know, looking at it now, he wasn't traveling quite as good as he is now. And so relieved to see him moving so, so well now, particularly here at Churchill.
And that schedule could turn out to work in your favor, right? I mean, I know that you like when a horse is making its third start off a layoff, and this could end up being the right timing for you.
Yeah, that was the plan all along. I mean, of course, we would have loved to win, you know, all of the preps leading in while still moving forward. But that's okay. You know, we set this plan up, and hopefully it works that his third race of the year is his best.
I see. So it was always going to be three races, the Derby being the third race. You just wish he had been a little bit tighter for the first one.
Well, if we have success in the Derby, it won't matter. For the horse's sake, coming in as the 2-year-old champion, you don't look to lose any race. You try to have him ready to win, and like I said, he's came up a little short. But we were always looking at the big picture, and you know, I wouldn't change anything as far as what races we pick to run him in.
Very good. Well, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle, and she can cue the media to line up for some questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press *1 on your touch-tone phone at this time. Our first question comes from Danny Brewer of HorseRacingScoop.com. Please go ahead.
Chad, how are you?
Good. Yourself?
Quite well, thank you. Listen, do you think the two races that he's won, the Juvenile and the Bluegrass, both had large fields? And, of course, we got 20 horses coming up May 5th. Any factors that help him, tell you anything about him, or what's your thoughts on that?
That's a good question. Hopefully it helps him. You know, he's definitely had good trips in those races, but they were, you know, a large group of horses, and hopefully it gives him some experience. Particularly in the Bluegrass, his last race, in the first turn, he was getting tight there on the first turn. I was really proud to see the horse kind of elbow his way and keep his spot, so to speak, you know, and really fight for his early position on the cue of his jockey. And the horse really showed some grit there, and he got banged around a little, and he took it well, and he still went on to win the race. And I'm hoping that experience in itself right there really serves him well in Derby.
Man, you flat torn it up at Keeneland as far as the – so, I mean, being on that kind of roll, obviously you got to feel pretty good as you're heading into the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, everything's been going terrific with our stable. We, you know, had a winter of really rest and planning, trying to aim for the meets like Keeneland and the recently concluded Aqueduct meet where we did quite well. So the horses are really running well, and it does give you a lot of confidence coming into a big weekend like Oaks and Derby.
Ted, appreciate your time, man. Wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star 1 at this time. Our next question comes from Ed McNamara of Newsday. Please go ahead.
Chad, where would you anticipate good magic will be in the Derby pace scenario?
Of course, judging on his post and such, I mean, all things being equal, I'd like to see that horse get good forward position just behind the first group of speed horses, stalking them, and definitely in the first half of the field. And maybe a little bit better than that, hopefully.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any further questions, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone at this time. There are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the conference back to Mr. Mulhill.
All right, Chad, before we wrap up, I just wanted to ask you about the preparations in terms of arriving at Churchill Downs, when you did, getting a work over the track. I mean, some of these trainers in the race would rather stay where they were and come in after their last work. Just talk about coming to Churchill Downs and the plans for the next few days.
Yeah, I don't think there's any right or wrong answer there. You know, based on history, I just felt like I was already in Kentucky with the horse, and he's very comfortable at Keeneland, but, you know, maybe an hour away, why not go to Churchill and give him some experience over the track? It's proven not to be necessary to win, but I just don't see a scenario where it hurts you. So we decided to come to Churchill and get one work over the track. That'll probably happen on Saturday, and hopefully it works to his advantage.
Excellent. Well, Chad, we love the way he's looking, and we wish you luck over the next 10 days, and we'll see you at Churchill.
Thanks a lot. Take care. Thank you.
All right. That was Chad Brown. He's got the 2-year-old champion of last year, Good Magic, and we got to talk about a lot of very good 3-year-olds today between those three trainers. I'd like to thank them all once again for being on. Todd Pletcher, Bob Baffert, and Chad Brown. I'll be at Churchill Downs from now through the Derby, so if there's anything that I can do for you or that the NCRA can do for you to help your coverage, just let me know. I'm always happy to help. There will be a transcript of this call up tomorrow and an audio file later today, and I think that's all. So I'm going to give it back to Michelle to wrap up. Thanks, everybody, for joining us.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude the conference call for today. You may now disconnect your line and have a great day.